Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Bob Dio. Bob on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the Buckmaster Show. On a special day, really, in my professional career anyway, this day, January 3rd, 2019, it was 8 years ago today that we signed on the air with the radio show bearing my last name. So that's exciting. That means 8 years, 8 full years, and then we begin year number 9 today. You're listening to AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk, with our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. All of our podcasts and pretty much the complete show archive, going back to that first week, actually, had a rather historic show on the Thursday of that week. We did the last interview with Gabrielle Giffords before the tragic shooting. So that's the kind of thing that you will find in the archive, and pretty much 95% of the shows, maybe higher, have been archived. So it now almost becomes an historic archive there at buckmastershow.com. Our live line number is 790-2040. The Southwest Books of the Year competition began in 1977 by the Arizona Daily Star and continued in the year 2000 by the Pima County Public Library. This is the 42nd annual Southwest Books of the Year. It's the best reading publication, and it's published by the Southwest Literature Project of the Pima County Public Library in partnership with the Friends of Pima County Public Library and the Arizona Historical Society. Books selected by two or more of the 5 reviewers become a top pick, and this year there are 9 top selections, which we will be discussing today on the show. 2 of the 5 reviewers are with us on the Buckmaster program to talk about the cream of the crop of this year's submissions. Dr. Bruce Dingus. Bruce is retired director of publications for the Arizona Historical Society. Bruce, how are you?
Well, I'm very good. Thank you very much.
Good to see you.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, and always a pleasure to have you on the program. Helene Woodhams is with us. Helene is a retired Pima County Public Librarian who has coordinated the Southwest Books of the Year for the past 12 years. Helene, how are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'm happy to be here.
It's always a pleasure to see you as well. Bruce, how about this crop of books this year? What can you say generally before we get into some of the top picks?
Well, it's always an adventure. We start the year not knowing what we're going to end up with, and I think this year is really, as it seems to always be, a very exciting year. We find a lot of different books, unexpected surprises, and also authors that we've known for a while reappearing on the list. So it's been fun, and I think we've got a good crop here again this year.
And you get a lot of books, don't you, Helene? A lot of submissions.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure it varies year to year, but it's got to be in the hundreds.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 150 would be kind of lowballing it. And we also have children's books, which we don't talk about in this program, but it's a whole other segment of what we do in terms of the best of Southwest literature.
And how many picks do you usually come up with on the children's books?
I feel like this year there are 4. It can vary. It depends from year to year.
But that's an important point, because a lot of parents are looking for some appropriate reading material for the kids.
Yeah. When we first moved here from Connecticut, one of the things that made me sad, I had small children, was that they didn't get to read books that were about them and where they lived. And one of the things I love about what we do at Southwest Books is here are books about the way we live, with a landscape that looks like ours, and cactus and javelinas and, stuff that we can relate to.
Arizona's Deadliest Gunfight, Draft Resistance and Tragedy at the Power Cabin, 1918. That is our first selection, Bruce Dingus, and the author, Heidi Osler, we interviewed here on the program, last summer, I think it was. It's a University of Oklahoma Press book, and I really enjoyed this. Well, I love Arizona history. I love history anyway, but I had not heard about this particular incident in Arizona history.
This incident actually has been much written about, but always it's been the the source of a documentary recently, a novel. There were at least two memoirs came out of it, but it's always been a mystery. It happened over 100 years ago, 1918, on a snowy winter day in the Glaro Mountains. A group of lawmen surrounded the power cabin. Their intention was to arrest them for draft resistance. And when the smoke cleared, three of the lawmen were dead. The father, the patriarch of the family, was dead. And the two boys, John and Tom, and a hired man, John Sisson, had headed for the Mexican border, which launched the largest manhunt in Arizona history. The power boys spent 42 years in prison. They were the longest inmates in terms of tenure.
Wow.
And when they were pardoned by Jack Williams, he said this event would now go into the realm of myth. And it's been that way until now. Heidi has gone through the records, done the research and government documents nobody's done before. And she comes up with a very nuanced picture of what happened here. And it's a commentary on sort of small town mores, patriotic zealousness during wartime, and just the tragedy of three men whose lives were literally ruined, and also some very good lawmen who were dead because of this sort of misguided sort of patriotic fervor.
The foundation, of course, was the brothers' refusal to register for the mandatory draft for World War One.
Yes, and this is also a very small, tight-knit Mormon community, so the death of these lawmen was taken very personally. Family members would show up for the parole hearings year after year after year, resisting having these men released for 42 years.
Yeah, that many lawmen. I don't know specifically if that's the most that ever lost their lives in an incident, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I wouldn't surprise me at that point.
Arizona's deadliest gunfight, draft resistance and tragedy at the power cabin, 1914, is one of our nine picks. The next pick, A Girl's Guide to Missiles, Karen Piper. This is Viking Press. Helene, what can you tell us about this one? It's a very interesting title, to say the least.
The subtitle, Growing Up in America's Secret Desert.
Huh.
This is the rare book that comes our way in that all of the panelists selected it as a favorite. So, I mean, across the board, we all loved it.
All five panelists said yes to this book.
And it's a coming-of-age memoir. Mm-hmm. It is equal parts poignant and bizarre. And it throws light on a little-known aspect of the atomic age in a truth-is-stranger-than-fiction kind of way. Karen Piper describes what it was like to grow up in the 1970s during the Cold War on the naval missile testing base of China Lake in the Mojave Desert. It's a place that was built for war and was shrouded in secrecy. Some background. China Lake is located, as I said, in the Mojave Desert, and it is about the size of the state of Delaware. Yeah. During the Second World War, researchers at Caltech used to go out into the desert and blow up stuff, testing their missiles, and the neighbors...
They still do testing.
Well,
there.
The neighbors complained, so they had to find some place that was even more remote.
Okay.
And that's how they came to China Lake. They flew over until I could find an enormous expanse of empty desert, and there they were. So weapons were built at China Lake, including napalm and tear gas. Mm-hmm. But what it's best known for is the Sidewinder, which was used fairly catastrophically in Vietnam, and the Tomahawk missile. Piper's dad worked on the Sidewinder. Her mom worked on the Tomahawk. And she and her sister actually both worked there during the summer, so it was a family affair.
Right, right. But
she was just six when they moved there from Seattle. And it was a place, she says, that could even drive a little kid crazy. She got terrible anxiety attacks from it. And there's a Dr. Strangelove absurdity to the place. They describe low-flying jets and crashes and explosions and sonic booms. And she said every day felt like a different kind of invasion was going on. And it's a different take on the desert because here's a place where there are signs that say, beware of unexploded ordnance.
You know? And so you be very careful
be
if you're out
careful.
Hiking around.
I mean, by comparison, scorpions and rattlesnakes are not especially scary.
Bruce, did you want to weigh in real quickly since you also said yes to this book?
Yeah, it's hard not to love this book. I think just because she writes with a sort of wide-eyed innocence. Having grown up in a scientific community, she went to very fundamentalist schools. She had led a very sheltered life. So once she went off to college, it was like a whole world she didn't know existed outside of this. And it's really kind of hard not to fall in love with that kind of attitude.
Is Karen Piper coming to the book festival?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. She will be at the book festival.
Okay. In fact, some of these authors that we'll be talking about will be as well.
You know, I'm going to roll back for a moment if I can. Heidi Osler, who wrote the book Bruce just spoke about, will be at the book festival, but we'll also be doing an event for the Library Foundation coming up. And if you looked at the library's website, you'll be able to get more details about that.
And the book festival, I believe, is the first weekend in March.
It is.
Year.
This is a change up.
A little
from
bit of
normal.
A change, yeah. All right, we're going to take our break right here. We still have seven more Southwest Books of the Year to go over. But first, I want to tell everybody about our great sponsor, Mona's Danish Bakery. I love their Danish Kringle. They do just a beautiful job with all their baked goods. They're up at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's Danish Bakery, open right now for lunch. My favorite would be the hot turkey on the rustic bread. Have you been up there yet to Mona's?
I'll tell you what, I live right near there. I love Mona's.
Yeah, well, good.
The crinkle is terrific.
I had a feeling when I saw your face when I was talking about Mona's that you had some experience with Mona's. Bruce,
and
if you haven't, you need to go.
I haven't, but I'm suddenly hungry.
There you go. We'll take our break right here. More on Southwest Books of the Year on the 8-year anniversary edition of Buckmaster. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends at Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Not only on their 13-acre site do they have everything you possibly need for your garden, they also have Zocalo Village, all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. Zocalo Forever was over at Country Club and Broadway, that area. Well, they're now part of the Green Things family, and the merchandise there is really spectacular. These handcrafted items there from Mexico, and there's some items from Peru. And I know Helene Woodhams, who is with us here in studio, you've been over there to Green Things. You love it.
Many times, and I like that it's on the Riverwalk.
It's a great location, 3384 East River Road. The website is greenthingsaz.com. We are doing the annual Southwest Books of the Year competition, talking about this year's best picks, 42nd annual Southwest Books of the Year. Helene Woodhams is with us, retired Pima County Public Library librarian, and Bruce Dingus, retired director of publications for the Arizona Historical Society. Bruce and Helene are two of the five judges who signed off on some of these books that there's nine top picks. First segment talked about Arizona's deadliest gunfight, draft resistance and tragedy at the Power Cabin, 1918. We talked about A Girl's Guide to Missiles. Our next book is titled John Woman. Bruce, what's this one about?
This may come as a surprise to people who are used to Walter Mosley as the author of the E.Z. Rollins mysteries. He's also a very deep thinker. He's read a lot in philosophy and history. And in this book, his main character is a biracial youngster. He murders a man and covers up the crime and changes his name, identity, becomes a professor at a New Age university outside of Phoenix. And he has a peculiar take on history. His belief is that we can never know the past, but we can rearrange the facts so that they influence the future, and that we can basically reinvent himself as he did. And it really resonates, particularly now when facts are sort of malleable. And it's not a book for everybody. There's a lot of violence. It's kind of a bizarre sort of cult that he gets involved in, but it's a really thought-provoking book and really, really well-written.
Walter Mosley is the author. It's published by Atlantic Monthly Press. John Woman, W-O-M-A-N, is the name of the book. Next book, The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West, by John Branch, W.W. Morton, the publisher, and Helene Woodhams. This was one of your picks.
Yes, John Branch is a New York Times reporter, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. This book started out as an article that he wrote for the New York Times on about a champion rodeo family, and then spent 3 years researching the family because their story was so much bigger. He focuses on Bill and Evelyn Wright, who live on a 1,200-acre spread in Utah near Zion National Park. They're descended from Mormon pioneers, and the land has been in their family for 150 years. They have 13 children, countless grandchildren.
13 kids.
And they hope that their kids can continue to ranch the land, but they face pressures that all ranchers do. Costs are skyrocketing, and there's pressures from tourism, and there's pressures from development, and the BLM, and EPA, and so forth. The way they hope to save this is by their winning ways riding Saddle Bronx in the pro rodeo circuit, which is a long shot. This is not an easy thing to do, but it's not out of the question for the Wrights because they are rodeo champions. The Wright kids and their grandkids dominate the circuit. Their son, Cody, is a two-time world champion Saddle Bronc rider. He's won millions in prizes and sponsorships, and his stiffest competition comes from two of his own kids. He's got, this fascinated me. Branch did such a good job with this book. Cody's cell phone contact list lists all the horses the family has ridden and all their characteristics. So somebody, one of the family is going to ride this horse, they call Cody. Cody tells them what to expect.
The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West by John Branch. That sounds like a good one. The line becomes a river dispatches from the border. Francisco Cantu, published by Riverhead Books. Bruce Dingus, you and Helene both liked this book very much.
Yeah, this is a, I think it, it's a judge, this book was disliked by both sanctuary movement people and Border Patrol agents when it came out, which meant it spoke to me that he got it just about right. Cantu had been a Border Patrol agent for 3 years and then left the patrol and actually became a graduate student at the U of A. But he's seen both sides of the question, and I think is an incredibly fair-minded and very perceptive view of what's going on the border. There are heroes and villains on both sides, and he has a really good understanding of what's at stake. And there, the reasons that he left the Border Patrol are very compelling, and the reasons that he has the position that he has now are equally compelling.
So you're going to kind of get an insider's look to the border crisis, or some would say crisis.
I think this is such a terribly important book. Yes. So many books have been written about the border, but there aren't many that are as clear-eyed and personal and really filled with humanity.
All right. Is he another of the authors? By the way, if there's an author that's coming to the book festival, Helene, let me know.
Well, I will jump in. Francisco Cantu will be at the book festival, as will John Branch.
Oh, good.
So many people to look forward to.
There you go. Lullaby Road is our next book by James Anderson, publisher Crown Books. Bruce Dingus, what about it?
This one didn't quite make my list, but it made other people's. And I really think that Anderson is really one of the best writers I've read this year. This thing takes place in the dead of winter on a stretch of highway in Nevada, and it's filled with quirky characters. There's a compelling plot to it, but he tells the story so well. You're with him every minute. You can feel every second of it. I think it has to be experienced to really believe how good it is.
Helene?
The most eccentric character, as Bruce was speaking about a handful of characters, is a short-haul truck driver who pulls into a station one day. He's a feisty guy, and he's got his own heartbreak to deal with, but he pulls into the station and finds that a mechanic he barely knows has left in Ben's care his mute child and a very large dog, and says, "Bad trouble, please help me take the child." So Ben has to search for the child's family, and this sets in motion this perilous chain of events that ultimately involves this whole quirky community. I just wanted to mention that Lullaby Road is actually the sequel to Anderson's brilliant debut novel, The Never Open Desert Diner.
All right.
But they stand alone perfectly well. You can double your pleasure and read both, or read just this one.
Lullaby Road by James Anderson.
I believe also will be at the book festival.
Thank you. The Line Becomes a River, dispatches from the border. We talked about that book, The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West, John Woman by Walter Mosley. We talked about that book in this segment. Coming up next in our segment, I'm looking forward to this because the well-known author, the late Charles Bowden, was a friend of mine. So I want to hear what Bruce Dingus and Helene have to say about The Red Caddy, Into the Unknown with Edward Abbey. That's the book we'll talk about next as we continue with the annual Southwest Books of the Year competition, coming up after the break. Noble High
Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our 8 full year anniversary show here on Buckmaster, now launching into year number 9 of our project on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted local news and talk station. Glad you're along with us. One of my favorite segments that we do each year is talking about the top picks in the I love to read, so it's natural this would be a popular segment with me anyway. Southwest Books of the Year competition. This has been going on for 42 years, really started by the Pima County Public Library, which is still very much involved. There are five judges, five reviewers, and they come up with a top pick, and if two or more of the five say they like it as one of their picks, then it becomes one of the top picks of the year. And this year we have 9. Dr. Bruce Dingus is with us. He's one of the reviewers. Bruce is a retired director of publications for the Arizona Historical Society and Helene Woodhams, retired Pima County Public librarian is with us. She also has been involved coordinating, so not only a reviewer, but at coordinating the whole Southwest Books of the Year for the past 12 years. We've been talking in the first half of the program. We mentioned a couple of top picks: Arizona's Deadliest Gunfight, Draft Resistance and Tragedy at Power Cabin, 1918, A Girl's Guide to Missiles by Karen Piper, Walter Mosley's book, John Woman, The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West by John Branch, The Line Becomes a River, Dispatches from the Border by Francisco Cantu, that's a Riverhead Books publication, and Lullaby Road by James Anderson, published by Crown Books. The Red Caddy, Into the Unknown with Edward Abbey, by Charles Bowden, the late Charles Bowden, University of Arizona Press. Bruce Dingus, it's great to read something new from the late Charles Bowden.
Yeah, it is, and this may surprise people. Chuck died in 2014, unfortunately, but he left behind 8 unpublished manuscripts. And
wow.
Thanks to the University of Texas Press, the Lannan Foundation, the Bowden Literary Trust, University of Texas Press is bringing those 8 manuscripts back into print over the next 8 years. And this is the first of them. And this is a book that Chuck wrote in the 1990s, shortly after Ed Abbey's death. And Abbey and Chuck were close. I remember Jim Harrison saying that Chuck was probably the most unsentimental man he ever met. And he isn't sentimental about Abbey. What he loved about Abbey was that he was an honest person, an mm-hmm. honest friend. And this mm-hmm. this book, Chuck ruminates on the price of celebrity, particularly, and what people were doing with Abbey's legacy in the wake of his passing, turning him into a saint and a hero that he wasn't in real life, and ignoring his real accomplishments. And so it's a rumination on the price of celebrity. Of course, it being a Bowden book, it's also a lot about Chuck and his views on man and nature. As a bonus, Luis Urrea does the foreword.
Yeah, I thought Luis did a really good job with the foreword. Luis Urrea has gone on to do just really big things. And he talked about in the foreword, Bruce and Helene, how influential Chuck Bowden was to his career. And actually, the reason Luis even, I think he was in San Diego at the time, Chuck told him, get him on over to Tucson.
Yeah, it's one of the great things about Chuck is he helped out so many people. It's only now that we realize how really extensive his relationship with other authors were, particularly people who were up and coming, and how he helped them along. And also, Luis retrieved Abbey's Cadillac, hence the title, and drove it to a person who bought it up in Colorado.
The Red Caddy, Into the Unknown with Edward Abbey. If you loved the work of Charles Bowden, Chuck Bowden, like I did, you will want to get a hold of this book published by the University of Texas Press. A Thirsty Land, The Making of an American Water Crisis. Is it Seamus McGraw? Is that the author? Again, this is another University of Texas Press book.
Yeah, McGraw based in Pennsylvania. He's a journalist, and it takes a lot to get a water book on a list for me because, you know, no pun intended, they tend to be the driest books you can read. This one absolutely is not. It's a study of water policy in Texas, and what McGraw has done is gone and talked to the stakeholders, the people who are involved in it, corporations, lawmakers, people, ranchers, farmers, lumbermen. And Texas is unique in the sense that it's got both sides of the water problem. East of the 100th Meridian, there's too much water. West of it, there's too little. And what he does in a really engaging way, mainly through people, is show how Texas may have the way to the future in dealing with mm-hmm. water crisis in a fair and equitable way.
Our ninth book, but by no means last, because all of these books are stand on their own. The Which Way Tree by Elizabeth Crook.
This is a wonderful book. It's an historical novel, and it has everything. It has obsession and revenge and a dangerous journey and a pursuit of a demon of mythic proportions. And it's also a very engaging coming-of-age story written with dialogue that is so pitch perfect. It's wonderful. It conjures up the 19th century. It's droll, it's humorous, and it's a great story. It's like, I think Captain Ahab meets Huckleberry Finn in Civil War era Texas. Instead of chasing a white whale, Benjamin, who is a teenage narrator, and his half-sister Samantha are after an enormous black panther, a mountain lion that killed Samantha's mother and maimed her horribly in the same melee. It left her half mad, and she's determined to find this animal and kill it and keep its pelt in revenge. Benjamin's kind of an unwilling participant. He's ostensibly along to protect his sister, but you really get the impression that the world needs protecting from her. And over the course of their journey, they're helped and hindered by any number of, you know, kind of odd eccentric characters. There's a rogue Civil War soldier and a caring pastor and this elderly panther-tracking dog. And it all comes together in this beautiful odyssey with fabulous language. And read it because it is a wonderful book.
It's beautifully packaged by the publisher Little Brown and Company.
Yeah, and you're telling on me. I brought it along to show you how wonderful the woodcuts were.
Again, I love
very
them,
19th century.
Of the panther, the woodcuts of the panther. It's just, it's a nice package. They spared no expense.
Elizabeth,
really nice.
Oh, it is beautiful.
Yeah.
You can even see on the
like
spine
it.
Of the
yes,
book. Isn't
I
that
see.
Nice?
Yep.
Elizabeth Crook will be doing a program for the Library Foundation, I believe, in February. Again,
okay.
If you look on the library's website, you'll find that information.
And there's also all the information about these books will be in a pamphlet that will
yes.
be in all the libraries.
The Southwest Books of the Year publication is due out early next week.
Mm-hmm.
Will be available at your local library,
mm-hmm.
In bookstores. But start at your library because that's where it goes first.
So there's, and again, many of these authors are coming to the book festival.
Yes.
The first weekend in March.
The first weekend in March, not the second.
Okay. Bruce, any final words?
No. Again, it's been obviously I do. I shouldn't say no, but yeah. Again, it's been a great year of reading, and I hope people will go out and pick up the list and go out and buy some books from their local independent book dealers.
And we may have people who may be just joining us and saying, Bill, could you quickly go over the list of the 9 picks? And I will do that right now. Arizona's Deadliest Gunfight, Draft Resistance and Tragedy at the Power Cabin, 1918, A Girl's Guide to Missiles, Karen Piper, John Woman by Walter Mosley, The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West by John Branch, The Line Becomes a River, Dispatches from the Border, Lullaby Road by James Anderson, The Red Caddy, Into the Unknown with Edward Abbey by Charles Bowden, University of Arizona Press, another Texas Press book, A Thirsty Land, The Making of the Un-American Water Crisis, and The Which Way Tree by Elizabeth Crook. Thank you to Helene Woodhams and Bruce Dingus, two of the 5 reviewers this year, for the 42nd annual Southwest Books of the Year. Well done, both of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks for having us.
All right. We'll take our break right here. Up next, Attorney Don Luce. He's the legal contributor to the Buckmaster Show right after this. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
This is Moa Mosgallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our 8th year anniversary. We begin year 9. A big thanks to all of our great sponsors, partners, our listeners, and all of our contributors. One of our sponsors has been with us since pretty much day one, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of the many great places to stay and so many recreation opportunities like hiking and maybe snowshoeing in the Gila National Wilderness in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. I mentioned contributors. I am just so honored to have, about 24, 26, maybe 26 now, contributors to the Buckmaster program. And one gentleman who's been with us since day one, our legal contributor, is Attorney Don Luce of Luce Law, whose offices are here in Tucson in the Phoenix area. Mr. Luce is the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, that's in its second printing, a book called Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. That book also has a second printing and may be available right now. I'll find out from Don Luce. But Don, first of all, let me say thank you for your support here on our 8-year anniversary edition of the program. Thanks for being with us since day one.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Bill, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Estate Planning in Arizona, is that now available in the second edition?
The book is currently being put together with formatting and the things that need to go on in the back office. It'll be out next month.
Very good. Okay, let's talk about the minimum wage. This does impact Arizona, Donna. Arizona and 19 other states have minimum wage increases taking effect around the start of the new year. How do we stack up with other states, Don Luce?
Okay, so the minimum wage in Arizona through December 31st of 2018 was $10.50 per hour. Effective January 1st of this year, the minimum wage increased to $11 per hour. $11 per hour is pretty much average among the 29 states and the District of Columbia that have minimum wages above the federal level of $7.25.
And I believe Arizona will also have, there'll be a next year another increase. Is that your understanding?
Yes, set to adjust for inflation annually.
So we're kind of in the middle of the pack, and this is important because I know a lot of people in the restaurant business say this does impact their business, Don Luce.
So the restaurant owners who are paying now 50 cents an hour more to their workers are in many cases passing along those cost increases to their customers. Now, it may only be an extra dime or an extra nickel or an extra 15 cents, but they're making up for the increased wage in increased cost, and that's what has a lot of people talking about the increase from $10.50 to $11 an hour. It may seem inconsequential, but when you go to your favorite restaurant and you pay another dollar or $1.50 more for your meal, you're essentially paying for the increase in the minimum wage.
There are some areas that are way above the federal average, and I think we should point out Seattle. Their largest employers will have to pay at least $16 an hour. That's a big chunk.
It is. So, in addition to the 20 states that are seeing an increase in the minimum wage, there are also a couple of dozen cities that are seeing an increase in minimum wage, and Seattle is one of them. It'll be $16 an hour starting January 1st. New York City has a $15 an hour minimum wage. And remember, the federal minimum wage is only $7.25 an hour. So when we're talking about $15 and $16 an hour, we're actually talking about more than double the federal minimum.
Can we quickly point out some of the states that have very low minimum wage or are right at the federal level, Don?
So there are a couple of dozen states that are at the federal level. 29 states and the District of Columbia have minimum wages above, but the rest have minimum wages at the federal level. But even the ones that have above, if you're looking at Arkansas, for instance, their minimum wage was $8.50 an hour. Effective January 1st, it rose to $9.25 an hour. Mm-hmm. So that's $2 above the minimum, the federal minimum. Alaska was at $9.84, and it rose only a nickel to $9.89. So those are states that are below Arizona but above the federal minimum. But as I said, there are a couple of dozen states, actually a few more than that, that actually don't have a minimum wage that is above the federal level, mm-hmm. but rather is at the federal level at $7.25.
Yeah, well, Alaska is very interesting. I was up there last August, and if anybody's visited up there, the prices are not low, so that's kind of surprising to me that the minimum wage is so darn low. Anyway, Ingrid has a quick question about this, and then we're going to move on. Okay, go ahead, Ingrid.
Yeah, this has to do with minimum wages and tipping in restaurants. If you're tipping in restaurants and you're getting minimum wage, it seems unfair to the customer.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Don, any thoughts on that?
I don't have a legal perspective on that. I know that a lot of restaurant owners are concerned that the customers are placing the blame for the increased cost on the restaurant, and the restaurant owners are saying, of course, we're only increasing the prices because we have to pay our workers more.
Sure. All right, let's move on. A new Arizona law. This is really important. A new Arizona law will help prevent so-called surprise hospital bills from out-of-network providers. So, Don Luce, does this finally give some protection from these surprise hospital bills for folks?
Oh, absolutely. This new law, which also took effect on January 1st, essentially provides safeguards to patients who might go into a hospital which is considered in-network. In other words, that's where their health insurance provider is going to pay for their hospital procedures. And then they discover that some of the procedures were performed at the hospital, at the in-network hospital, by outside doctors who are not in-network. And it's the bills from those doctors that are considered to be surprise hospital bills. So not in-network, a doctor contracted by the hospital to perform services, and it might be something like an anesthesiologist or one of the doctors that are part of a team that are performing a procedure at the hospital. They bill the patient directly, and the health insurance provider says, you know what, this bill is submitted by a provider who is not in-network, and you're responsible for it. Well, now there's a legal remedy. And the first step in the process is to file a request for dispute resolution with the Department of Insurance. So Arizona, like many other states, has a department that is devoted to overseeing insurers, including health insurers, and the Department of Insurance will take requests to engage in what would generally be considered mediation between a patient and an out-of-network provider over a disputed hospital bill. If that doesn't work, then the next step in the process is arbitration. And arbitration is not court. It's a process that is designed to achieve a quick and efficient resolution of a dispute outside of court. And the arbitration decision will be binding on both the patient and the provider. There are some exceptions. Oh, and I should add, by the way, that arbitration can result in a decision that affects the patient no greater than what the patient's maximum liability would have been if he or she had otherwise paid the procedures and they had been covered, which generally means a copay or deductible for a lot of plans. So this is a game changer for patients who receive large bills that they had no knowledge of going in. There are some exceptions. First, the bill has to be at least $1,000. So if it's less than $1,000, this procedure is not available and the patient doesn't have an easy remedy. Secondly, it doesn't apply to anybody in an HMO or a health maintenance organization. And thirdly, the patient cannot have been informed in advance that they would be receiving treatment from an out-of-network doctor. It has to be something that they didn't know about. And the only exception to that exception is if they're admitted to the emergency department they have a procedure performed as a result of that admission. So even if they're told at that point it doesn't count against them, they can still use this procedure to dispute a bill from an out-of-network provider.
How will it be executed if someone has questions about this?
Department of Insurance. Arizona Department of Insurance is administering the dispute resolution procedure. If someone receives an out-of-network bill that's more than $1,000 and they didn't know about it and they're not part of an HMO, then they ought to contact the department and institute essentially a request for mediation.
We're with Don Luce. We're talking about some new measures that took effect at the first of the year. I did want to carve out a minute or two, Don Luce, about Utah and gearing up to implement the nation's lowest DUI limit. I think this is worth talking about. Could you fill us in?
Yes. Utah is now the toughest state for DUI. I've heard for years that Arizona was the toughest state. Our title has been taken by our neighbor to the north. It's now Utah. 0.05 in Utah is now going to get you arrested and if proven convicted of DUI in that state. Now, by comparison, the vast majority of other states in the United States have 0.08 as their threshold. And what we're talking about, of course, is the blood alcohol content. And so to translate these numbers, what does 0.08 mean? Mm-hmm. Well, for a man, for instance, weighing 200 pounds, it would be four drinks. That would be a 0.08. Mm-hmm. What does an 0.05 mean? For that same man weighing 200 pounds, that would be about two drinks. So as you can see, there's a pretty big difference between 0.05 and 0.08 in terms of what it would take to get you to those blood alcohol levels. And for women, it's even more surprising, I believe. A woman weighing 100 pounds need only drink one alcoholic beverage on average to register a 0.05.
Wow.
Incredible.
talk about game changers. That is really something. And for the guys, you know, you're saying it can go, depending on your build, it could be one drink.
Well, for, you know, for thin guys like you, Bill, at 100 pounds.
Sure. No, but, you know, it depends, of course, on what you're drinking. But still, people are going to have to be really careful, certainly in Utah. They should be very careful anyway, but, yeah.
Agreed. But seriously, at a 100-pound man, one drink, 100-pound man, one drink, 0.04. Mm. That's pretty close to 0.05, and that would get you arrested in Utah.
Wow. All right, Don Luce, your books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, that's in its second printing, and soon the Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, will be available as well. That will be both books available at Amazon, and as they say, where better books are sold everywhere. Don Luce, always a pleasure of Luce Law. Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot.
Soon.
All right. Don Luce, our contributor on legal affairs on the Buckmaster Show, one of two dozen or so great contributors. A great contributor to the show is Bob Dio, our producer engineer. Thank you, Bob, for all you do. Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera is next. I'm Bill Buckmaster. The 8th anniversary edition ends. We're into 9 years now. Have a good afternoon.